Good time call, phone's blowing up. Ring on my doorbell, I feel the love, feel the love.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your single word image of music criticism and cultural normativity. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. We're hearing Chandelier, a single by Sia Furler. And John Pareles is here today to talk about Sia Furler. Hey, John.
Hey, Ben.
You reviewed Sia's new album, A Thousand Forms of Fear, this week in the paper.
Indeed.
It's sort of a milestone record for her because it's the first album since a bunch of things happened in her life and in her work.
Yeah, it's the first album since she took this weird, incredibly lucrative turn in her career.
Mm-hmm.
She's been making albums since 1997.
Right.
So this is her sixth studio album. So she should be known quantity by now, but...
And she was also in the 90s singing with a band called Zero Seven?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
One of those sort of acid jazz, trip-hop,
right,
smooth, sultry,
right,
so
British
bands.
Through this conversation, we have to remember that's where she came from, that time and that type of sort of nuevo boho.
Well, but it was also...
Kind of sound.
It was also the sound of smooth despair. And that's still a foundation of her music, I guess.
Yeah.
But what happened was she's not apparently the most extroverted person. She's shy. She used to get herself really drunk and get herself really high to go on the road and tour and do what you're supposed to do,
yeah,
to make a career. So 3 years ago, she backed off it. She said, wait a minute, I don't want to do this, I guess. She had been writing songs with Christina Aguilera, mm-hmm, for Bionic. And she wrote songs the way some songwriter collaborators now write songs, which is to kind of be the shrink and counselor and figure out the core phrase of what's on the singer's mind.
Yeah.
This worked with Christina Aguilera, and she started writing songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gets off stage, she starts collaborating, and suddenly she's a hitmaker. She writes Titanium with David Guetta. She writes Diamonds for,
right,
Rihanna.
Right.
She writes Perfume with Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all hits.
Yeah.
I think what happened to her was she allowed herself to write cliches that she wouldn't sing herself,
mm-hmm,
which gives her a little bit of pop freedom and lets her be a little more concise.
Yeah.
But also she just, this is what she can do.
Yeah.
It's a gift. I mean, pop songwriting now is for some songwriters such an assembly line thing. You get the beat maker and you get the top line singer, and the top line singer comes up with the melody and may or may not be the one who comes up with the lyrics.
Yeah.
You've got this distribution of skills now.
Well, she also figured out a way to write self-empowerment anthems at what seems like sort
the
of the lowest time in her life.
Yeah, but pop music does that. Pop music fills the void sometimes. Pop music is the opposite of what you're feeling. It's the fantasy. It compensates.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she could do it in her songs, but not in her life for a while.
Right.
But at this low point, at this point where she's like phobic about being on stage, either fighting or getting out of addiction, she finds this way to communicate.
As it was described in a recent article in the Times, a profile about,
right,
her, she tends to land on a common image, something that might be around the house, something that everybody knows about, whatever, a single word.
This was, I mean, she's overt about this. Diamonds,
right,
perfume.
The example in the article was when the first time she sort of understood the concept, she said, so I can write about this piggy bank here on the table, write a song called Piggy Bank. Piggy Bank will be the symbol of whatever is the emotional struggle that the song is going to be about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But it's a formula. It's a clear, self-conscious formula. Find the image, write the song.
Right.
There's a song on this album, Elastic Heart. She talks about being a rubber band.
Yeah.
It works.
Mm-hmm.
It gives some people something concrete. And I don't think that this was a great revelation as it's shown, because it's in her songwriting before, too. I mean,
right,
songwriters do use concrete images.
And she's not the only person to do. Right. I mean, like Brad Paisley does the same thing.
Yeah.
A single word.
I want to check your body for ticks.
Yes.
It's not that uncommon, but it's a strategy she admits to. The other strategy she admits to is what she calls victim to victory,
mm-hmm,
where in the verses you're miserable, and then the chorus is this big soaring triumphal thing where you triumph over it.
Right.
So she does these two things knowingly, but she also just channels this craziness.
Titanium being sort of the ultimate example.
Definitely.
Maybe of victim to victory. It's just sort of like, if I remember the words correctly, it's basically saying, I will just keep advancing. I will just keep coming at you. You can throw whatever you want at me. I'm not even interested in retaliating. It doesn't matter. I'm above it all.
Yeah, apparently she heard the music and got the idea and went to Google or something to find out what was bulletproof.
Right.
And titanium was bulletproof.
There you go. So if we can explore the content of a song through a single image, let's deal with Chandelier. That's not exactly a victim to victory song.
No, that's a victim to victory to victim song.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it starts out kind of sounding like, kind of like Kesha to me, kind of like low and scratchy and she's being a party girl.
Yeah.
But then the pre-chorus is she's getting drunk, and then the chorus and the pre-chorus is also, you know, I'm the kind of girl for good time call. I mean,
yeah.
She knows she's like going to get herself in trouble.
Yeah.
She gets drunk.
And in her moment of drunkenness,
she swings on that chandelier.
She is the greatest.
Yeah.
And she attains this. Here is where I think the crack in her voice really works, because she's like, she's swooping up high and she's quite magnificent, but she's also damaged.
Yeah. Well, it's really raw. Half of this album, you feel like she's been up crying all night before she did the vocal takes.
Yeah.
You know, there's someone human in there. She is not laminated in her pop perfection,
mm-hmm.
the way Rihanna would be if she sang that song, or the way Beyonce would be if she sang that song. You get the feeling that there's this real crazy imperfect person in there.
Was she always doing this kind of thing with her voice?
Yeah, I mean, she came out of jazz, pop, acid jazz, that kind of thing, in Australia, and her first album is really very much almost a vocal experiment.
Yeah,
there are a lot of things where she just sort of riffs along and does wild, swoopy things with her voice. She's always been one to use the brokenness,
mm-hmm.
to use the slur and the scrape.
Yeah,
I mean, and on this album, I think she goes over the top with it. As I mean, this whole album is, lots of it is over the top in lots of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But this album, half of the times when she says duh. You know, she's not enunciating as perfectly as a typical pop producer would want her to.
So if Rihanna had done Chandelier, how would it be different?
It would be a lot neater.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Rihanna would do that song, though.
Mm-hmm.
But she might do some of the other songs on the album, which are a little more sort of straight, you know, I'm a strong woman who's vulnerable songs.
Mm-hmm.
There's one we should listen to later, Big Girls Cry.
Yeah.
I mean, Rihanna could do that song without, you know, breaking a sweat. But it would also be a lot neater than the way Sia does it. I mean, Sia does, she loves the way her voice cracks, and so do I.
Yeah, and she pushes the cracking and some of the like marble-mouthed phrasing. There actually is some autotune in Chandelier, but it's not remedial. It's, you know, stylistic.
Yeah, no, it's a sound effect.
And it's not in the big, huge chorus, as far as I can tell. You know, it's not obviously
autotune
there.
Can be used subtly.
Sure.
So we don't know.
We don't know. So let's hear another song from A Thousand Forms of Fear by Sia, Free the Animal. So that was Free the Animal by Sia, which, well, John, is that Sia's version of a love song?
In some ways. I mean, it's love song as battle to the death. You know, it's hit me like a baseball. This love immortal is an assassin's delight. It's more like, can you top this? But it's also triumphal. I mean, in the verses, she's knocking him around, and the chorus is he's knocking her around. It's sort of it's equality of a sort.
Mm-hmm.
But I also love it because she and the producer, Greg Kurstin, just go nuts with ideas. About midway through, they start chopping up her voice into these micro slices that it sound like this crazy electronic gurgle. And then Kurstin starts playing a bunch of xylophones like he's making a Steve Reich composition.
Mm-hmm.
It's pushing pop. I mean, this is Victim to Victory. This is Triumphal. This is a love song that's loud and big, happy chorus, but it's also nuts.
It's an interesting record because here and there you hear songs or parts of songs that sound just big and normative. Like, this is what pop sounds like right now. This is big radio pop right now. And a certain kind of person under different circumstances and possibly in a different time would compare the Sia of old to this album and say something to the effect of, oh, well, you know, she sold out or something like that. The interesting thing is that she created the parameters for music like this by being a songwriter in this style before she worked as a pop star in mm-hmm. this style. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, she's one of many.
Yeah.
I mean, because when I listen to this album, I mean, there's one song that reminds me of an Alanis Morissette chorus. Mm-hmm. There's one song that reminds me of Alicia Keys' No One. I mean, this style is around.
Yeah.
She's really good at it.
And she's also, you know, willing to, as you were talking about, you know, with what she did with Greg Kurstin on this song in particular, Free the Animal, you know, she's willing to, like, put sonic ideas in that aren't that familiar.
Yeah. I mean, she actually loves the plinky things. I mean, the song that would have made her career if she wasn't so unhappy being on stage was Breathe Me, which was on her 2004 album. That was the song that was the finale for 6 Feet Under.
Yeah.
That had everybody in total tears. And that has the plinky xylophones in it, too. But it's also just an incredibly touching song about being so vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, she could have gone down that road, too. And I think she tried for a while to just, like, be a little less cliched and a little less radio-directed.
Yeah.
But then this gift of hers came in sort of got her out of the blue. But I think she's still trying to be pretty strange. She's giving herself the A material, or she's giving herself the A material with a twist. I mean, one of the songs she co-wrote, one of the songs that she gave to a client, Perfume, Britney Spears' Perfume,
yeah.
That is an odd song. That's a song where Britney Spears, the singer's boyfriend, is going to go see his ex-girlfriend. So Britney is going to wear perfume and give him a big hug, so she's marking her territory. I have the feeling this wasn't Britney Spears' idea. I have the feeling this was Sia's idea. It's just twisted.
Kind of dark, kind of animalistic.
Yeah. Of course, the twist is that, of course, Britney Spears has a perfume to sell.
Brilliant. Yeah. What was the timing on that, by the way? Was the perfume waiting in the wings?
I think there had been a perfume, but there was a new one being introduced or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's this.
She was thinking of Britney Spears. She thought of the perfume. That became a song idea. Sure. Can we compare Sia to her friend Katy Perry for a minute?
Sia's a songwriter, though. Katy Perry, not so much.
But Katy Perry writes songs with help.
With help from Sia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big Katy Perry fan. You're more of a fan than I am, I think. To me, Katy Perry is, oh, let's push this button. It's my birthday. I'm going to bring out the big balloons.
Mm-hmm.
Ha ha.
Mm-hmm.
Sia wouldn't settle for that in her own stuff, I don't think.
Too obvious for Sia.
Too obvious and too just like not twisted enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Katy Perry is, I'm sexy, I'm your girlfriend, I'm your dream, I'm your fantasy.
Yeah.
Sia is, I'm a mess. I'm a mess, deal with it.
Yeah.
We should play this song, Cellophane, where cellophane is the image, and you're going to hear static, which is not in your podcast, but is actually cellophane crackling. She compares herself to a cellophane-wrapped fruit basket of pain.
All right, let's hear a little bit of cellophane.
Look at me, I'm such a basket case, delivered to you wrapped in cellophane, waiting on your doorstep every day. Delivery, a basket filled with pain. Patience is your virtue, saying to mine. I'd have fallen through the cracks without your love tonight. I'm your groundhog and I'm skating on thin ice. But you see me at your feet and carry me inside.
John, is this maybe a case of, you know, block that metaphor?
Well,
I mean, is she taking it too far?
Is there such a thing as taking it too far? Nothing exceeds like excess. I think she's knowingly taking it too far. I mean, there's a line in here, I think, about it being a groundhog skating on thin ice, which I really do not understand.
Why a groundhog? I get skating on thin ice.
Yeah, I do not understand. I've never seen a groundhog in ice skates.
Yeah,
but also, I mean, the sound of the song is really bleak.
Yeah,
this is not Victim to Victory. This is like Victim to I Know I'm a Mess, and you're going to have to put up with it.
This one to me seems a little bit like it was just to hand. You know, like somebody sent her a gift basket, and it was sitting on her kitchen table, and she woke up and she didn't know what kind of song to write, and there it was.
But there it is.
But there it is. Perfect.
Did the person sending her the fruit basket think she was going to get from fruit basket to basket case? Such is the beauty of the creative process.
The producer of this album is Greg Kirsten, an LA producer in his 30s, I think, who's kind of like getting a lot of big jobs and cool jobs, too.
I respect this guy because he'll go out and he'll do a song with Pink or with Kelly Clarkson or with Kesha. But he'll also do Imena Sadanyana, or he'll also do his project with Lil George's daughter, The Bird and the Bee.
Right.
She's Inara George. He does little things and big things. And I think he brings a little weirdness into the big things. I mean, I think that's his secret mission. We've talked about another producer, Ariel Rechstad, who did Vampire Weekend, but also does giant pop hits.
Yeah.
I like these characters in L.A. They're in their home studios with their antique vintage keyboards, and Kirsten's got a xylophone, obviously, because he plinks it a lot on this album.
Mm-hmm.
And they're weaving things into the sonic fringes of songs that are really, they're treats. They're Easter eggs.
It is. It's very pleasure-based. And also just in terms of the range of music that they're working with, it seems very L.A. to me, this kind of like, it's not rigid. How they think about music is not like it all seems to be on sort of an equal plane. They don't seem to privilege one kind of music over another necessarily in creating their pop.
It's playful too. I think there's this sort of how much can we sneak onto the radio stuff going on. I think there's that, you know, let's do something that's not just, you know, the standard Pro Tools product. Let's do something that's a little odd. And I think with Sia, he's got a great collaborator because she's trying to do that too, especially in her own stuff. I mean, she'll write to order. She'll tailor a song for somebody. She'll give some other simpler pop star a song that's a simpler message for them to put across, like Diamonds. Given her own stuff, she wants to, clearly now she wants to be heard. She wants that big radio sound. But she's also doing Stranger Things.
Well, right. At the same time, she's the person famous for putting a bag over her head and performing with her back to the audience. At this very moment when she's deciding to come out as a fully fledged big radio pop song singer-songwriter.
Well, I mean, I do think that she's really mixed about it because she's done this album that aims for radio. At least two-thirds of it does, and then there's some fun, weird stuff that's not. But you can get five singles off this album.
But she wants to protect that feeling of being mixed about it.
And she also, I mean, she got her new record contract. She doesn't have to tour. She doesn't have to do promotion. I mean, she's done an interview with the New York Times Magazine, which is really revealing. She did a Billboard story a while before that, and that may be all she talks.
Yeah.
Which is brave, and she did the Ellen show with her back turned.
Yeah,
I mean, I saw her perform probably 2008. I mean, she was, you know, a regular performer. She was good. She made a live album at the Bowery Ballroom.
Well, this is the wisdom of somebody who only became really powerful in her 30s and realized that she could make choices like this if she wanted to.
Yeah, she got off. You know? She got off the cyclical machine.
Right, as she said in that New York Times preview, I've only recently become a baller. You know, so like there's this sense of it's only recently that I've been able to do what I want to do, get an enormous refrigerator, sing with my back turned, you know?
And take that lightning strike gift of being able to write these kind of songs.
Yeah.
It pleases me that inside the great factory that is radio pop now are these nutty people.
Mm.
Are these people who are, you know, fighting their own damage and doing something with it. I mean, these are not accountants who go to the studio to write a song. These are people who wait for lightning to strike and know how to put it in the bottle. I mean, one of the best things about this album is when there are no words. I mean, there are places where she's going, whoa, and ooh, and ah, and her voice is cracking, and it's like going off the words she's singing. I mean, nonverbal sort of primal sounds.
Yeah.
And those are as much the hooks at times as the words or the music or anything, because you're seeing someone inside that big pop machine.
The last song we'll hear is Big Girls Cry, which is a little more in line with the victim to victory strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I think somebody else could do this song. It's a good sentiment. I don't care if I don't look pretty. It's basically the sentiment. You don't have to be polished. You don't have to be laminated. You don't have to be perfect. I mean, Beyonce has songs like this. I can see Beyonce doing this song or Rihanna doing this song. I don't care if I don't look pretty. Of course, they do. Fine. So do we. But this could be a radio song, but it's still, I don't care if I don't look pretty. It's sort of a double negative. I mean, it's Sia's, you know, weird, twisted take on what she can get away with in this incredibly confining format.
Yeah, it is a double negative. That's exactly right. Adding up to a weird kind of positive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you go back through her catalog, there are a lot of negatives. She often comes at it backwards.
Yeah.
She's like Neo that way. It's a gift. But this song is, she's miserable and she doesn't care. You have to deal with it. I mean, even though it's about beauty, even though it's about fashion, even though it's about mascara and glamour and how you look, it's still a good thing for people to hear in this age of plastic surgery and having to be perfect anytime someone whips out an iPhone to take your picture. Mm-hmm. So it's a good message. I'm for her.
Here's Big Girls Cry from Sia. And thanks, John.
Thanks, Ben.
So, girl, in the fast lane, no time for love, no time for hate.
That is this week's show. Thank you for listening. You can read John Pareles' review of Sia's new album, 1,000 Forms of Fear, at nytimes.com/music. Check out the Spotify playlist for Sia and other artists that she's written songs for. Why don't you, this time, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes? Thank you. See you next week.